Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
And good day. Welcome to Fantasy Sports Friday. I'm your host, Jay Cruz, and it must be Friday. We're doing the show live, 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern time, and actually the show will replay tonight at 11 p.m. Pacific time, 2 in the morning Eastern time for those who can't sleep, or if you're up a little late trying to get some extra information for your fantasy leagues. Today, if you checked on the podcast on demand titles on the Fantasy Sports Friday, today's show is called The Value of a Closer. Now, we'll be getting into the value of relief pitching and having a top-notch closer and some of my philosophies on that coming up. And some of those do fly in the face of many people who write in our columns that if you're going to punt on a category, relief pitching and closing might be the one to punt on. Some other columnists and quote-unquote experts also say, you know, stolen bases are another category to give up. I feel different about those philosophies because, you know, if someone's going to give up that category, that's where you might want to, you know, step in and pick up the points that are available and take the available numbers for your team. Now, partly my fascination with relief pitching and the value to fantasy baseball's bottom line comes from a couple places. One from Fantasy Experience in the early 90s, and I mentioned this on a past show recently. It was either the first year where I was the official owner. I stepped in as a replacement drafter for a friend of mine who was, it was a league that had a lot of people from the radio and records industry. So he had taken a job in New York working for a label in New York City, you know, pretty exciting, and was, you know, quite busy doing the work where he could not find the time to fly out to San Francisco for an in-person draft. So about a week before that draft, he called me and said, have you heard of rotisserie baseball? This is how long ago it was, and rotisserie baseball was the original name for fantasy baseball because the first founding fathers of the sports got together in person. The internet didn't exist at the time, and they got together at a restaurant that happened to serve rotisserie chicken. I would have picked a pizza parlor, but, you know, fantasy or, you know, pizza related baseball that just doesn't have the same ring to it or obscureness of rotisserie baseball. So anyway, I got into that league as a substitute drafter. There was another friend of mine that I was also in the league, so I didn't feel like I was going in there alone. And it was quite an experience. We were in a room at a college in San Francisco that many people in the league were alumni from and were able to, I don't know if we were renting the room or if somebody just left a room unlocked either way. So we had, you know, other owners. It was a 12-team league, and we were a National League-only league. Meaning, you know, players on the Yankees, can't draft them. Red Sox, not in this league. And many of the owners in that league had teams in the American League. And, you know, there used to be the tradition, a lot of the old traditions that have gone away, where the American League draft was on a Saturday and the National League was on a Sunday. And, again, you could only draft players in the league. And at that time, I think it was 14 actual National League teams. You know, there's been a few expansion teams since. But, you know, 12, you know, fantasy leagues with 14, you know, actual teams to choose from, you had to get by with basically some slim pickings. A lot of people who play fantasy sports aren't willing to dive as deep into the leagues and make do with quote unquote average players to fill all the spots. You know, many people want to be able to pick a team from, you know, basically nothing but superstars. To me, that's kind of, it's a little bit of a cop out. It makes it easier, but it doesn't really teach you as much about the game. And I believe that, you know, for me, playing and being involved in fantasy sports has given me an insight into baseball and other sports that I don't know if I had before. I'd like to think I did, but certainly has enhanced it. So, you know, bottom line, I did the draft. You know, my friend Dave's team was basically second to last or in last place, and apparently I did a better job than Dave in drafting that team. They ended up, I think, making eighth place or something, but it wasn't last place or second to last. And the following season, the same situation came up again. He's still living in New York and coming to San Francisco for a weekend baseball draft just wasn't in the cards for him. And I think he found a league in New York more than likely. And, you know, his life was in New York and, you know, it was a great thing for him to go on to. So the other owners and he decided he would, you know, give up and suggested, you know, if they would, you know, accept me as the new owner, I would, you know, gladly do that. There was a payment to buy into the league, and some of that was for prize money, because I think the first three or four places got prize money. You know, it wasn't super big, but it maybe like $100 for the winner, $75 for second place, $50 for third, you know, $25 for fourth, something like that. But most of it was to pay for the statistics service at the time, because again, the internet was still kind of a pipe dream and being developed by internet developers, and this was the early 90s. Email wasn't even a thing. Yahoo didn't exist, so you couldn't just log on to a Yahoo Sports or thing. Again, we did the draft in person, and I didn't do a lot of preparation or study in the year leading up to that because I really didn't know that situation was going to happen again. I kind of followed more of the game as the season went on, and I didn't really have access to my friend's team and standings for how he was doing. So anyway, when they voted me in as, you know, his replacement owner, you know, there was a fee, I think about $100, not quite a lot, but, a chance to, you know, get in there. And it was, you know, something, you know, when you think about it, if you're following the season for 6 months or whatever, yeah, it's a lot of entertainment, and, you know, the price of membership didn't really seem all that much. But again, most of it went to being able to enter our league, you know, with certain teams, because it's a whole different universe than, you know, the actual Major League or National League Baseball. So it was a statistics survey, a company that would send us the statistics basically once a week. I would get a printout of how the teams were doing and see what kind of place we were in. And we were playing not head to head, but, you know, overall numbers. So you would get numbers in all 10 categories, and that would, if you're like have the team with the most home runs, you get a 10 point score. And each, there's 10 different categories, 5x5, 5 offensive and 5 pitching, not really defense, but pitching, which is essentially defense. So you would get, you know, placement on your numbers, and it'd be home runs, batting average, runs batted in, stolen bases, and so an average, home runs, RBIs, stolen bases, and maybe overall hits. And then pitching would be wins, earned run average, saves, something called WHIP, which is walks to hits per innings ratio, which is now a fairly common statistic, and strikeouts. So strikeouts, wins, WHIP, earned run average, and saves were the five pitching categories. And, you know, my team was doing okay. We're kind of hovering around the seventh or eighth place. Again, not last place, but not really challenging for the money, as opposed to playoffs, which, you know, a lot of leagues prefer to go head-to-head. Some prefer the standings or what's, I think, called best ball in a lot of categories. I like the head-to-head where you actually get wins per week, and then you move on to another opponent, and you just match up with one team for the week. And you get wins and losses instead of, you know, the points for how you're doing in the categories. I think that's a little more, you know, realistic of following the game and the sport and not so much just off statistics, which, you know, you still like to get wins and losses and have a bit of a tangible way to determine how successful or not successful your team's doing. So, you know, I'm hovering just under the middle of the pack, and a guy made a trade proposal to me. He gives me a call because, again, the emails didn't exist. This is how long ago this was. And he wanted to trade for my best hitter. At the time, it was Matt Williams, third baseman of the then, he was on the San Francisco Giants. And he was having a really good season. He was my best offensive player. And he was having a good year. This other player was more like above middle of the pack and challenging for the money positions. And he offered me a trade of a really good relief pitcher named John Wetland, who at the time was on the Montreal Expos and was, a little did I know, about to go to the New York Yankees, which was an upgrade in his situation and going to a different team. And he had him for a very cheap salary, basically the league minimum. In our league, it was 10 cents, probably more commonly a $1 player in leagues today. And, you know, I wasn't going anywhere, but he's like, you know, you're not really, you know, it might be time to think about net. He did a good job of selling me on the trade. He goes, you know, you're not really going to challenge for the money right now, but, you know, you're in the league, you're improving, you're better as a replacement than the previous owner. And, you know, you're learning, and, you know, the value of a closer might be something to consider. Relief pitchers, at least the closer, there's a lot of relief pitchers who come in and essentially pitch to, you know, a very small amount of batters, you know, to get through the innings. You know, once the starting pitcher has been removed, and, you know, kind of a general rule of thumb in baseball is, you know, the first time through the lineup, usually the starting pitcher does a good job and gets most of the hitters out. Second time, you know, some of the batters will start to figure out what the pitcher's doing. Of course, they're watching him. They got bench coaches, and now with video stuff, they got video replay. These guys go down into the dugout and they can watch, you know, in real time what they've been doing today against this particular pitcher and the type of stuff he's throwing and his tendencies, and they break that down. And then usually about the third time through the lineup, the hitters have kind of figured out the pitcher. They start to get more action on the bases, and that's when the, you know, the managers will start bringing in a number of different relief pitchers. Then they only go, you know, maybe an inning or two. You know, since then, there are rules in Major League Baseball to avoid, you know, changing a pitcher for every batter, which sometimes, you know, could slow the game down. You gotta, you know, a lot of managers like to play what they call playing the percentages. If they have a left-handed batter coming up, they want to bring in a left-handed pitcher. You know, same with the right-hander versus right-hander thing. To me, sometimes that's a little overrated, but that's the school of thought in baseball. I think if you got a good pitcher against a less than hitter, a good pitcher should get him out, or again, a better hitter should be able to get a hit off a less than pitcher. Either way, number of relief pitchers to get to the late innings, and if your team's ahead, you got a guy who's going to come in and basically be pretty unhittable for about one, maybe two innings. And the relief pitchers normally are good at that level because they don't have to go through the lineup and, you know, again, like a starting pitcher does, where after two or three times seeing that pitcher, batters start to really figure you out and pitchers start to get tired as they're throwing more pitches through the day. So relief pitchers come in, they don't pitch every day, and they can, you know, come in and get through an inning or two and, you know, come in with a chance to, you know, win the game. Usually they have very powerful fastball and maybe another go-to pitch and, you know, seem to get the job done. And by making that trade, my next year, I was closer to finishing in the money. And then the baseball strike happened. But by getting that cheap relief pitcher, I was able to have he was a very talented player, but his salary, I was able to keep him into the next year, meaning I was able to spend more auction money on other players and build a, you know, in theory, a stronger team and have more talented players at more positions than I, you know, had the previous year. And it really opened my eyes into the value of closing pitcher and, you know, what they really do. Generally, they do get a high number of strikeouts. Their earned run average is very low. Their, you know, the walks to hits per innings pitched ratio is usually microscopic. And then they get saves. And the save is a category. Again, it's one out of 10 categories, so it's just as important as RBIs, home runs, stolen bases. And, you know, like a good hitter will, you know, a good power hitter is probably going to have a decent average, maybe a little lower because they swing for the fences and not as many base hits and stuff like that. But they're going to have high number of home runs, which usually equates to a high number of runs batted in and probably a much higher than average batting average. They'll be in the, you know, top, you know, third of the league or better, you know, with a few exceptions. And, you know, and occasionally they might be a good base dealer too and win in a number of, you know, offensive categories. So I'm not saying don't concentrate on the offensive guys, but a good closer is also going to do that. And they might pick up the occasional win out of a save situation, but, saves are kind of the value in addition to the whip and the earned run average. So they're going to really score high in at least three categories for you in most cases. And not every team in Major League Baseball has a defined closer. And it's even a little less nowadays because, you know, with the metrics that so many teams go off now, which, you know, the whole Moneyball lesson movie, and I would suggest the book, goes way more in depth. You know, that's really kind of taken over in a lot of areas in sports and even other areas of life where you consider, you know, the data crunching and, you know, return on investments and things that you hear in, you know, corporate America so often. You know, a lot of these things, you know, also came from this philosophy in baseball where a lot of teams would just go out and bid the highest number for the most available, you know, free agent and, you know, not necessarily consider, you know, paying money for certain statistics that produce wins. So, you know, a lot of number crunchers that happen to be baseball fans, you know, figured out, you know, how to spend money a little less and get higher value for possibly cheaper players. So that kind of thought has moved in. And that's why, you know, the high price of a great relief pitcher or a closer is not what it was just a few short years ago. Teams tend to go with, you know, maybe a variety of closers as opposed to just one. And what's happening now, with starting pitching, it used to be you'd have a handful of guys who'd win 20 games, 17, 18 games a year. Now there's only like one or two guys that reach over 17 wins a year. There was one 20-game winner last year, and there were a handful of closers that had over 30 saves. So there are more closers that, you know, reach a higher level of saves. And again, you know, we'll score in a number of different categories for you and have a little bit stronger overall pitching staff in the statistics for you. Starting pitching, you know, they have a pitch count. You know, managers micromanage. Rarely does a starting pitcher go past five or six innings nowadays and get to that, you know, third rotation against a against a lineup that, you know, again, by the third time, usually the hitting starts to take over from the original starting pitcher of the game. And, you know, the 20-game winner is certainly a thing of the past. So, you know, some people might think maybe I should, you know, put a high premium on getting a starter, and they are definitely strong as well. And a good starting pitcher will help you in so many of those categories. But, the starting pitcher is not as reliable as a closing pitcher is in today's baseball. So that's something to consider heading into your draft if you're getting ready to do that or deciding on who you're going to keep for this year. And of course, you know, you got to follow what's happening in legitimate real baseball to, you know, make those determinations. One case in point, the Houston Astros, they had Ryan Pressly as their closer for the last few years. He's been averaging a little bit over 30 saves for a year, even with a couple seasons ago when the Astros did win the World Series, and it wasn't the trash can year where they were cheating or accused of cheating. And, you know, Ryan Pressly was a pretty decent closer. Well, in the offseason, this particular offseason, they went out and they signed free agent Josh Hader, who was most recently for the San Diego Padres the last year and a half. He came from Milwaukee before that. And he's been an all-star about 6 years running in Major League Baseball, and he's been a top four or five closer in all those years. And he's still relatively young. I think he's approaching 30, if not there, you know, where over the last time, Kenley Jensen was about 30 years old, pitching with the Dodgers. They let him go. He's been on a couple teams since then, including Atlanta and Boston, and his numbers have diminished, and he's taken more of a setup or is on, you know, teams that aren't winning as many games. Now, Josh Hader coming to Houston is kind of a big deal. The only thing is, you know, what happens with Ryan Pressly? The Astros sort of have a luxury with, you know, two really good closers. That does open up the possibility of trading one, because at some point during your season, if you got more than one good closer, I guarantee there will be another team looking for relief pitching at some point. They might not acquire a good closer in the draft or the auction, and they might just be willing to trade somebody at some point later in the year when they go, you know, my relief pitching is not so strong. If I got a good closer, might help me in a couple categories. So if you got more than one, you kind of have a luxury in that sense. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Houston make a trade at some point, although they're a pretty stacked team. But, you know, you never know. There could be an injury to a very, you know, key starter, and they might need to replace that guy and be able to pick him up from another team, and a team might be interested in a relief pitcher. Also, Josh Hader being a left-handed pitcher sort of reminds me of the old days. I grew up and still am, but back in the early 70s when the Oakland A's won three World Series in a row, they had a pretty good bullpen, and their best closer was a guy named Raleigh Fingers, who was famous for the handlebar mustache, and he went on to pitch for a couple other teams, including Milwaukee and a few other teams after that. Those Oakland A's of the 70s were a championship-winning team. They had a very cheap owner, Charles O. Finley, who, even though he won three straight World Series, he didn't want to pay his players even at early 1970s wages. He was really cheap, and in negotiating with his players, he was very hardball and brought things to light, you know, to say reasons why he didn't want to pay players what they are worth. So free agency did come in the 70s, and all those talented players from the A's did go elsewhere. But, you know, they had a number of relief pitchers, and it seemed that they had a great system for what, you know, as a kid listening, I know, okay, Paul Lindblad's going to come in and pitch to this guy, and then, you know, they have the other lefty, Darryl Knowles. They still got a young right-hander, and then eventually it's going to be Raleigh Fingers. But, you know, Darryl Knowles and Lindblad also got a lot of saves. They were left-handers, and, you know, back to today with Josh Hader being a left-hander with Houston, now Ryan Pressly being a right-hander, it could be possible that Houston keeps both players and has sort of a double-headed closer committee. Their numbers may go down a little bit, but they're both very talented and should really help things for Houston having that much talent at the back end of their bullpen. So that's something to consider. But, you know, back in the day with Raleigh Fingers and the A's, it was fun listening to them. And then as I was collecting baseball cards and watching, you know, the national broadcasts of games, eventually there was an award called Fireman of the Year, you know, for the guy that would come in and put out the fire. And I think it was sponsored by an insurance company. I think there was an antacid company that, you know, sponsored the relief, you know, for stomach relief, relief pitching, Fireman of the Year. So, you know, the advertising industry kind of picked up on what was sort of a newer category in Major League Baseball that has actually stayed since then, has been pretty much a key to championship teams, you know. When you get to the playoffs and you get to the end of the season, pitching is already about, you know, 75% of baseball is pitching. It's a game that's really built on failure. The best players in the league, their batting average around 300. That means they succeed only 3 out of 10 attempts. So you get into crunching the numbers, and can't really speak highly enough for having at least one good closer on your team in your upcoming draft. And if you can't get one in the draft, you know, maybe see where you have extra strength. Maybe you have a couple good first basemen. Find a guy who doesn't have such a good first baseman, but a couple closers, offer a trade, and see what you can do from there. So value of a closer is something to think about. I'm Jay Cruz, Fantasy Sports Friday. We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
You know, when my grandson takes a long car trip, he listens to audiobooks. A long drive seems faster, and sometimes he doesn't want to get out of the car because the book isn't finished. With over 100,000 books, Audible.com is one of the best places to get audiobooks. You can listen to a bestseller anytime, anywhere. Audible.com, your destination for the widest selection of audiobooks. Join millions of listeners. Just go to the Audible.com on HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Roku is like having your own video library with over 300,000 choices. And it's the best way to get Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, and so much more. There's a Roku player for every budget, so go to HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on the Roku banner.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
We're back, or we're still here. It's Fantasy Sports Friday. I'm still Jay Cruz. Sometimes I got to remember what show I'm doing. There's Fantasy Sports Friday. I do a once-a-month show called Backbeat Radio on the first Wednesday every month here on HealthyLife.net. And, you know, kind of the anchor of the news, Monday through Friday, the HealthyLife.net, HRN News at 7. So sometimes I got to go, okay, it's Friday, we're talking sports. It's Wednesday, we're talking music. But and the news also going on. Right now at this particular time of the year, we're in early March. Football has already happened. There is the Hot Stove League. If you play a fantasy football player, depending on if you have a keeper league or just a redraft league, it's a time where a lot of free agents in about a week, sometime in about a week or so, I think by next Friday, the new NFL season will have begun, and there's going to be some big news and big signings of players who are being let go and moving on to other teams. And with the free agency in the NFL and the way it goes, you know, a lot of teams will sign a player who's a free agent. Usually they can give them a big pile of money known as a signing bonus up front, so that player gets paid now, and then they might, you know, pay them a smaller salary so that they, you know, can work in their salary into the rest of the salary cap, sign more players, and that's usually part of the recruiting pitch to bring in a, you know, a top level free agent. And you got a case right now of Seattle had traded Russell Wilson to the Denver Broncos. Broncos gave up a lot. The Seahawks definitely got the better end of that trade, and Russell Wilson has been released by the Denver Broncos partly because of the amount of money his contract was due this year. So he has been released. Denver has a big dead cap hit in the salary, like a record-setting dead cap hit for the money that, you know, Wilson had still been guaranteed. Now, he's in a situation where he'll be going to his third team. He's coming off a couple unsuccessful years with Denver, but, you know, he still might have some value left in the tank, and going to another team, the new situation, you know, might benefit him. And, you know, he still, again, could turn it around. He was starting to play better last year than the year before. And teams are probably hoping to get him for a lower price since he received a big, big, big contract from Denver and might be able to play for a little bit less. So that's a name to keep an eye on. And the quarterback position is always a bunch of dominoes. Once one quarterback this year, probably Kirk Cousins of the Vikings, he's a free agent, probably the best potential free agent quarterback in the league right now. The only issue, or the issue with him, he's coming off an injury, the Achilles tendon, and that can take up to a year to fully recover, unless you're Aaron Rodgers, who supposedly was recovered pretty quick last year. And sometimes players don't come back from it. But he is expected to make a full recovery and be ready to start next year. So probably by the time we're on air next Friday, there will be a few big changes in the National Football League as the new league season, because next Friday will be the 15th. I think it's the 12th. Sometime next week, the new season begins, probably Monday, but it's always in the middle of March. And then next month will be the NFL draft in about 6 weeks, which is another kind of domino effect in looking ahead for your fantasy football teams. And right now, it's time for teams and managers, fantasy players, to begin drafting in their baseball leagues, and that can be a whole different variety. There's not too many of the National League or American League-only leagues. A couple years ago, I tried to play in a couple leagues that only allowed that, but pretty much I've moved on to the Keeper and the Dynasty League. In fact, the Keeper League I've been in for, I think this will be our sixth year. We have a draft coming up Thursday, the 14th, and that's just a draft. You know, we keep five players each year, and based on the draft round you draft that player in is for a couple seasons where you can draft them again the following year. For my team that's in that league, the Stone Sox, I turned in my keepers last weekend. First baseman Matt Olson, I got him in the second round, and I'll be giving up my second round draft pick to keep him. Pitcher Logan Webb of the San Francisco Giants, I got him in the seventh round. The Giants are going to be interesting this year. They, you know, couple seasons ago competed with the Dodgers, went right up to the end of the season, and then had a good playoff series, which eventually the Dodgers won, and then the Giants sort of, you know, fell back to the pack the following year. They were a team that had not the best statistics, but seemed to have clutch hitting and win games, you know, without the best statistics. So they were a bit of an anomaly, and they kind of sort of fell back to the pack last year. They made a change at manager. They hired Bob Melvin, a very well-respected manager who won a number of games with the, you know, underappreciated, underpaid Oakland A's. He had a good season 2 years ago with the San Diego Padres, and then last year the Padres fell back to the pack. So the Giants asked permission to interview him from the Padres. They hired him, and Bob Melvin was a former Giant for many years. And he might have even had his own radio show back in the days. It seemed that catchers or former catchers do make good managers, and that's partly because they – as a catcher, they know how to handle the pitching staff because they're out there basically helping to call pitches, you know, even though the, you know, manager or pitching coach might be the one really calling the pitches and relaying them to them, like Bruce Bochy of the Texas Rangers. He was a former catcher, and I'll tell you, when it got to postseason last year, I'm like, this guy just knows exactly what to call, and if he's on top of it, you know, I don't see the Rangers losing, and they did win the World Championship, so... He had led the Giants to a couple World Series and had been doing good with the Padres before that. So Bob Melvin coming to the Giants, Logan Webb, a pitcher I kept. And I had a good team last year. We finished third place, so there's a lot of players that I just have to give up because of the high draft number that they have. But I kept three people at the very end, maybe second-guessing one guy that I kept, but... You know, this way I have three players at the very end of the draft, the last three rounds, and they're all very talented and a big upside. One, of course, Michael Harris the third outfielder with the Atlanta Braves. I picked him up in a trade a couple seasons ago that turned my season around, and Jeremy Pena, shortstop of the Houston Astros. He's the one I kind of maybe second guess, but I got him again. He was a free agent traded to me, so he gets the low draft round position, 23rd. Harris will be in the 24th round. And Bobby Miller, pitcher of the Dodgers. I decided to keep him because I did pick him up as a free agent late last year, and he has a pretty good upside pitching with the Dodgers. So I've got a Giants and a Dodgers starter on my team. And, you know, again, keeping the home run hitting leader, or one of them, Olson from the Braves, and a good starting pitcher with the Giants who, you know, got a number of good categories. So heading into that draft, feel pretty strong. It's pretty close to the draft last year when I had nearly everybody in the last handful of rounds. Harris and Pena are a couple keepers from being in the last round last year, and should set me up for a, you know, a pretty strong season. I'm also pretty happy to have number one first round open, so when that round, when the first round comes up, I will at least get a selection. There's a lot of players in the league who, you know, keep their number one draft choice, and I definitely understand that, and I've done that in leagues past and in other leagues as well. So that is happening next Thursday, and then next Saturday is the auction draft, where it's a little bit different. I've shed some salary cap, only have about 7 players to sign in the auction draft, and been spending some time since everyone has turned in their folks that they're keeping with the team. You know, I have a chance to kind of, and it's going to take a little bit of paperwork, so I might be doing that all day Sunday and breaking down, you know, what team is going to have more money to spend, the positions that they're going to need to fill, and I need to do some research on everyone's minor league roster, because on the Yahoo Sports, the league we play on, the folks who are in the minor league in our universe are listed as available players. So I also want to make sure no one doesn't nominate one of my players. That just makes things a little more confusing. And in the live draft situation, you don't want to have to, you know, stop things like that. You just want everyone to kind of be a little bit better as far as knowing the available players. And I feel pretty good about that. No, you know, having experience from auction leagues before, I know a couple players that I will focus on and a handful of players that I'll try to avoid. But there's going to be a couple good names in there, a couple good hitters that probably will command top dollar. And in this case, you know, I don't necessarily have to consider keeping them next year. I have a pretty good core of players that I'll be able to keep at affordable salaries going into next year, when again our salaries in that league will increase. So getting the strategy for the auction draft, knowing exactly who or what you want to draft, and you have to have a few options there. You can't just set your, you can set your mind on one player, but you can also be disappointed pretty quickly if somebody outbids you. But I'll be doing some strategy, knowing which owners have more money and to avoid bidding wars with, and having a number of options for players I'm looking at to fill my team. And most of it's going to be pitching. I do have 2 closers on my team, the aforementioned Josh Hader, now with the Houston Astros, and a guy who was out all last year, Edwin Diaz of the New York Mets, who had a knee issue when his team was celebrating at the World Baseball Classic. His arm is fine. I'm just a little concerned about the Mets. How many games are they going to win? Last year they started off good and then fell back to earth pretty quickly. But we'll see how that goes. Either way, 2 closers on the team is going to be much better than 1 or none. And, you know, again, could be a possibility of somebody probably wanting to trade. I'll probably have to turn down a lot of trade offers in that situation. We're going to come back and talk a little bit about basketball, because as we're getting ready for baseball drafts in March, by the end of March, we'll be into NBA and fantasy basketball playoffs. We'll take a look at that in just a moment here on Fantasy Sports Friday with your host, me, Jay Cruz.
Shh, over here. Here's a secret for a virus-free computer. ESET, They've been a pioneer in the antivirus industry for over 25 years. 25 years of innovative, top-rated antivirus protection. ESET's award-winning security solutions provide a safe online experience for over 100 million home and business computer owners. They are so affordable, fast, and simple to use. So be gone, you blue screen of death. ESET's on my computer. If it's not on yours, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ESET now.
I love this song!
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Everybody down!
Dwayne Johnson here. The earthquakes you see in movies are one thing, but real life is a completely different animal. Just because you can't predict an earthquake doesn't mean that you can't prepare for one. In the event of a real earthquake, you should drop, cover, and hold on. Visit ready.gov/earthquake and practice what to do to keep you and your family safe in the event of a real earthquake, and you'll be seen as a hero by your family and your loved ones.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Where positive people and radio unite. HealthyLife.net.
And let's continue Fantasy Sports Friday today. I'm your host, Jay Cruz. If you ever want to go back and listen to some of this and maybe share it with a friend, you can, of course, go to the podcast on-demand link here on the HealthyLife.net homepage. And you can also look ahead and see if there's going to be some cool topics coming up during the month of March, a lot of different topics, you know, focusing on baseball, since that is the season that we're about ready to draft. And, you know, that's generally where most of the players who play the sport will be looking for tips to kind of confirm their own hunches or grading on players coming out and see if there's a diamond in the rough from some of the experts who might be able to, you know, find a player that might not be on a great team but it's going to be getting some playing time, or, you know, someone who might not start the season off but be there, you know, shortly thereafter. In Major League Baseball, that's, you know, very common. You have a lot of younger players, rookies who might get called up in a month or so that may not be on the big league team at the beginning of the season. So that's something to look at. And we're about 3 weeks away from fantasy basketball playoffs, about 6 weeks from NBA season getting into the real playoffs, which is kind of the time when, you know, many casual fans of the sport might start looking a little more. You know, basketball starts, and so does hockey. So that's a couple sports that kind of compete with football during the fall. And you do have a little bit of baseball competition in there, as the October is pretty much when the playoffs happen. So that's a big time when all four sports are going. And sometimes, you know, fans might be like, well, they're going to play 80-something games in the NBA. I'll start watching it at Christmas, or I'll start watching at the All-Star break, or I'll start watching when, you know, football wraps up and before baseball gets going. So, and then there's people who, you know, love the sport and watch it all the time. For whatever reason, I am much better as a fantasy sports manager in basketball. And I really, sometimes I wonder why that is. I did play basketball in high school. Maybe I understand the game just a little more from being involved as an actual player in, you know, trying out for teams and everything going on with that. It seems to be a sport that I have much more success. I've won more championships, and I usually place pretty high in the leagues and, you know, get at least to the, you know, second or third round in the playoffs. When football can be a little more challenging, and baseball too. The thing I like about basketball and baseball is that there are games every day of the week, generally, or, you know, not all the games are on, you know, Sunday or the Monday night or Thursdays now, which I guess is half the week in the NFL. But anyway, basketball and baseball, there's games every day, except a couple weeks ago when the All-Star break happened, and that was like That was like living in sports Siberia for a week. There was just nothing going on. You know, spring training hadn't started. There wasn't a lot of information on players and such. But, you know, once the All-Star break ended, it was back to a full slate of basketball. So, kind of like baseball, I'm in some leagues that have the same commissioner and a lot of the same players. There's a keeper league, which has been going for a number of years. And my team in that league is called the 11-11s. And in the brand new auction league, which is a dynasty league where we keep more players, use a salary cap and do an auction instead of a draft. That team is the Dribbling Druids. And I'm pretty proud to say that the Double Ds, the Dribbling Druids, have maintained a pretty solid season. We're tied for second place. Would lose the tiebreaker because I think I did lose a game to the team I'm tied with, but we so far are tied for second place with only 4 losses on the season. We've got a record of like 13-4, and pretty much I'm guaranteed a playoff position with only 3 weeks left in our fantasy season before the playoffs. And the top 8 teams in the league making it, team number 8 has 10 losses, so there's no way I can lose 6 games out of 3 games left before the playoffs. So, you know, the position I'm in when it comes to that seeding-wise could be a little different. I'm probably going to be, and I'm 2 games ahead of the team behind me, so there's a good chance I'll be no worse than second, third, or fourth when it comes to the seeding, and I'm pretty happy about that. You know, overall, the season's been a success so far, and I think part of that came from doing the auction draft in baseball last year. And I didn't do so good in the baseball auction last year. I made some mistakes. I think I overbid for players at the beginning, and when it came to the middle and later rounds, I didn't have enough capital to bid on some players that I just had to let pass because I couldn't afford to field the entire team, you know, with those particular players. And then I had some bad luck. A couple of the higher priced players got injured. And, you know, that also reminds you not to put all your eggs in one basket. Some players and owners will be successful in getting, you know, the highest paid player in the league and doing okay. When it came to our basketball draft, a lot has changed in the NBA. And basketball watching. In fact, last night I was watching the doubleheader on TNT, the normal Thursday night doubleheader, the nationally televised game. One of them included what could be a preview of the finals. The defending champion Denver Nuggets hosted the Boston Celtics, and the Boston Celtics have been the best team so far this year. They're easily the number one team in the East. I don't see them not making the NBA finals. Unless, you know, some team like the Miami Heat gets red hot and, you know, beats them in 7 like last year. The Denver Nuggets in the West are going to have a much, much more competitive playoff experience getting back to the top. But, you know, they've got a great team. And then at the other end, you know, here I am watching a doubleheader and the 2 best players, you know, literally in the 2 games, are both basically foreign-born players. They're both from Serbia originally. Luka Doncic, Dallas Mavericks, and Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets. And, you know, these 2 guys have also won most of the MVP awards in the last couple seasons. Denver won the championship last year. And it's fascinating because, again, you know, back in the 1970s, you know, dating myself, but there was a time before Magic Johnson and Larry Bird came into the league, and of course they, you know, had that big college championship game, and then they went to the Celtics and Lakers, and then they had the amazing rivalry through the 80s. And back in the 70s, before those 2 came into the league, the NBA playoffs would be on tape delay and would not start until 11:30 at night. Yeah, if you weren't around then, it's fascinating to realize that, you know, here we are with a cable doubleheader, and then again, 2 of the best players were born in Serbia, and played in leagues over there. You know, fast forward from the time that the tape delays ended and, you know, basketball with cable TV sort of became a little bit more common. There was always some network games on the weekend, usually through ABC, having a game of the week, and some other networks, CBS used to as well. You know, it kind of, you know, alternated a little bit. And then, you know, cable in the 80s, you know, became a little bigger. The Turner Network sort of got into it, as did ESPN, before Fox had a, I don't think Fox has really been involved in NBA as much. But, you know, look at 1992, in the summer of 1992, and that's when the United States decided, all right, enough of sending our college kids to the Olympics. If other countries can send their quote-unquote professional athletes to the Olympics, we're going to do the same. So the United States in 1992 put together what was known as Dream Team. And what a team that was. I mean, you got pretty much everyone on that team, I think with maybe one exception, have all been Hall of Famers. You had some of the best shooters and just a variety of talented players. It seemed like any kind of matchup definitely, you know, was beneficial to Team USA. I mean, the Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Patrick Ewing, Clyde Drexler, the two guys from the Jazz, Malone and Stockton, you know, Chris Mullin, a great outside shooter. Just a fascinating team. And, of course, they won the gold medal, and they won many of those games by many points. The Olympics that year in 1992 were in Barcelona. And it was like, you know, it was like the Rolling Stones or something, or now Taylor Swift, you know, where everywhere that members of the Dream Team went, there were, you know, fans following them, trying to get autographs, pictures, and the whole deal. And they really kind of superseded the entire Olympics just because it was such an amazing group of superstar NBA players all on one team at the same time. And again, they won huge in every single game. And during that time, a very sharp announcer, I don't remember who, I might give credit to Bob Costas because I know he was calling the games in the Olympics, usually carried by NBC, and he's kind of worked for that network forever. But somebody, I think it was him, made an observation back in 1992 that with the fact that the NBA's best players were playing the game on an international scale, that eventually the rest of the world was going to catch up and put players from their teams into the NBA. One guy grew up in Barcelona, Pau Gasol. He came over, he and his brother, successful NBA players. Pau Gasol, a couple championships with the Lakers, a few other teams. They just, I think, retired his jersey for the Lakers. And there's been a number of really good foreign players. Fast forward to last night, you got two guys who are Serbian, who are basically the top two statistical players in the NBA. Now, if you watch them, they don't have, they maybe aren't as smooth as many of the American-born players, and, you know, aren't as indoctrinated into the American culture of basketball, but they're fundamentally sound, and they put up some of the best statistics. Nikola Jokic almost averages a triple-double-double, and, you know, scoring over 30 points almost every time he does it. And then Luka Doncic actually is a better athlete, a better shooter. If you watch Nikola Jokic, he seems a little slow, but he seems to get everybody involved when he's playing. His team, their statistics are much better when he's on the court than when he's not on the court. So that is, that's just where the NBA game has really come a long way. And you watch the NBA draft and players coming, and there's always a number of players who have played in Europe and foreign places who end up getting into some of the top draft slots here in the NBA draft. And they're coming from organizations that seemingly are teaching better fundamentals for today's game than our current colleges are in the NCAA. Now, I'm not a fan of the NCAA. I'm a fan of the sports, football, basketball, and all other college athletics, but the way it's ran is questionable at best sometimes. And with the NBA and basketball players having such interesting size and potential based on height and physicality, there's a number of players who are, you know, 7 foot tall coming out of high school, and it's obvious they're going to play basketball and probably not going to be an insurance agent, stuff like that, or, you know, what have you, to go to college. So essentially, college basketball and football are, you know, really glorified minor league sports being run by colleges and colleges' rules. There was a, used to be a rule where you could just go right into the NBA right out of high school. Number of players, Kobe Bryant, Kevin Garnett, Spencer Haywood was the first one back in the early 70s. Just go right out of high school, right into the NBA. Then they had the one-and-done rule, which if you look at the University of Kentucky and Coach John Calipari, he seems to get great recruits. They come in for one season, and then he gets a bunch of great recruits for the next season as everybody, you know, plays their 1 year, or technically a semester, until they kind of quit college and go to the NBA. But the foreign-born players are playing in actually foreign professional leagues and get a little bit better coaching and seasoning. Right now, the interesting player who came from France, number one draft pick this year by the San Antonio Spurs, Victor Wambayana. He's almost 7 foot 5 inches tall. And normally someone that big is kind of a little awkward athletically and in the open court. They're not the best dribblers, not always the best outside shooters, but, you know, he is. He's great all around, and obviously his height makes him great presence defensively for what's going on. The San Antonio Spurs have been struggling the first half of the year, but the last couple of weeks and month or so, they're starting to play a lot better, and Wembanyama is starting to contribute a lot more. So it's just interesting how much the I think the Dream Team influenced the rest of the world into picking up, and, you know, now it's certainly more common to have foreign players in the NBA than it was back in the 90s or before. I think that's about all the time we have for today and this week on Fantasy Sports Friday. Next week there'll be some NFL news. Probably some free agents will have signed by then. Maybe some guys on your favorite team. Maybe some on your favorite team checking out. We'll also have a report on at least one of the teams that I'll be drafting next Thursday, and an update on what's happening with the NBA and fantasy playoffs as we get closer to that. You can always listen to the replay on Saturdays 9 a.m. and find this show on demand. I'm Jay Cruz, checking out Fantasy Sports Friday. Until next time, here on HealthyLife.net Radio.